everyone. Bob Main here with another episode of today's Survival Show, helping you harness the power of choice to live life the way you want to live it on your own terms and strengthen your resolve. I try to keep survival simple, rooted in common sense, and practical, and this is definitely a practical show. I don't engage in tinfoil hat type of thinking or paranoid stuff or conspiracy, goofy things like that. I just keep it rooted in common sense. I like to talk about the common sense barometer. And everything I say or everything you hear other people say, I want to encourage you to always check it with your common sense barometer. What I mean by that is, does it really make sense? Is it really going to improve your life? Does it make sense for what is going on? I mean, there's a lot of these people out there. I don't want to name names because I really don't want to pick on other podcasters or other people that do shows or have blogs and websites about survival. But there's a lot of them out there that are really into these far out, end of the world scenarios. And that's all they're thinking about. And they forget about the here and now. And that's what I want to encourage you, is not to forget about the here and now. Because survival is also about what do we do right now so that in case a disaster happens, we're better prepared. But also, we're doing things in a more efficient way today. And that'll make sense as I go through the show. And the reason for that longer introduction is because there's been a lot of new listeners lately to my show. So I want to give you an idea of what this is all about. I'm just a regular guy. I'm not some kind of a survival trainer. I'm not some kind of a person that's written a whole bunch of books and done this for 35 years and so forth. I'm just your average guy on the street trying to make a living, probably just like most of you listening to this show. And I'm just a salesman that was born in New York, raised in Wisconsin, and now live in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. As they say around here, I'm a damn Yankee because I came here and I stayed. So that makes me a damn Yankee. So I've got some listener feedback for you. So let me jump into some listener feedback here real quick. And by the way, I always love feedback to my shows. I'm a very open-minded guy. This is a listener-based show, and if you have any suggestions on how to improve it, I'm all ears. There's a contact page at the main website, which is todayssurvival.com. That's todayssurvival.com. There's a contact page. Or you can just simply email me, bob@todayssurvival.com. bob@todayssurvival.com. Either way, it'll get to me, and I'm real good about answering emails. So, one of our listeners by the name of Stu sent me some really good feedback recently. He said he just wanted to drop me a quick email and thank me for the podcast and the work that I do on prepping. He got into the prepping scene about 4 months ago, but he says he's always had the prepper mentality. He said he heard of the prepper term for the first time in a BBC article. And he's been involved in getting involved in prepping ever since. He says the prepper community has been an invaluable resource in helping me organize my thoughts and get serious about something that was always a back burner or a hobby or an idea or some kind of a concept. He says, Bob, what's really driving me to write to you today is how much I appreciate the focus you maintain on your podcasts. Now that I've listened to some of the other online personalities for a few months, I think I'm really starting to learn how some of the other people tick. While I do listen to multiple podcasts, I find myself drawn to your shows because you seem to maintain a more level-headed, holistic, and realistic approach to the subjects. Passion is good, but too much can make you lose focus on the bigger picture. You're doing a great job of balancing the message with reality. Thanks, and keep up the good work, Stu. Well, Stu, first of all, thank you very much. I appreciate those compliments. Folks, I got to tell you, I don't like to toot my horn. That's just not my style. I'm a lot more humble person than that, and it's actually kind of difficult for me to read to you an email like that from a listener, because I don't want to make it sound like I'm bragging. I don't know about you, but I don't like to listen to people that do that. So I don't want to make it sound like that, but I, you know, thank you, Stu. Yes, I do try to keep this rooted in common sense. I don't like to try to fly off the handle a whole lot. You know, there are a lot of personalities out there that do. A lot of them get into profanity, and a lot of them just start flying off the handle, and they get real weird. And I just don't like to do that. So, you know, this show might not be for everybody. But if you're just looking for common sense, down-to-earth stuff, I'm going to try the best I can to keep it that way. So, Stu, you know, I want to tell you, my old mentor, by the name of Tom Hopkins, a man who just really shaped my life in a lot of positive ways, Tom taught me a concept called balance. And it's probably one of the most important things he's ever taught me, that you have to maintain balance in your life. Emotional, physical, financial, and spiritual balance. Those are the four areas that you need to work on to make sure that things are in balance. It's like a scale. You know, if you put too much on one end of the scale, it starts flipping over, and then the whole thing is just all messed up. Our lives are the same way. And I try to bring balance to this show. You know, sometimes I get somebody on here who interviews that may have a different perspective on things, like the excellent interview that Fraser just recently did on apartment prep. And, you know, I've had people on here talking about wilderness survival in the desert and things like that. So I try to offer a balanced perspective. I certainly am not going to be a guy that claims to have all the answers, but there's a lot of people who do. And I got somebody else coming on the show that's going to talk about family survival and approach this from more of a family perspective. Even he has some things to say. I'm not gonna take too much away from what he has to say, but he has some things about prepping and working together as a family that's really cool. So thank you, Stu. I very much appreciate that kind of an email. It's very nice of you. Now, another bit of feedback that came in is from Nicholas. And Nicholas also started off by writing me, it's a real long email, so I don't have time to go over all of it, but I'll paraphrase the best I can. He starts out again by complimenting me and telling me thank you for keeping it real common sense and so forth. And I made a comment in an episode last year. I think it was like last summer or last fall. Somebody sent me a comment, sort of a negative one, kind of. I mean, I guess you could call it negative. And thought I was getting a bit political on one of my shows. And they said that I sounded like a right-wing hack. And Nicholas said that he remembered listening to that show, and he said that he would admit that in the first few episodes that I did, that he thought it was going to turn into some kind of a right-wing heavy podcast. But he said after listening to more of my shows, he realized that that really I'm just a guy like a lot of other people who are fed up with the incompetence of government, regardless of their party affiliation. And you know what, Nicholas? You hit the nail right on the head. I would say that I'm a conservative-leaning person, but I'm fed up with everybody who is just simply screwing up out there. I mean, let's face it, folks. Our problems are not going to be fixed at the ballot box. And both parties, I'll say it again, both parties, major parties here in the United States, have been leading us to believe that they can fix all of our problems if we just vote for them. That's got to stop, folks. Government is not the answer to our problems. That's all I'm going to say. Nicholas goes on to tell me a few paragraphs later that he wanted to give me a little bit of feedback and comments. He says, Bob, I'm a nerd, and I might have a solution to be able to obtain past episodes of the podcast without much effort for new listeners. And he basically wanted to encourage me to set up a different podcast feed as a link to get some specific episodes and older episodes. So let me address that, because the rest of you out there might have the same type of question. I modified the iTunes feed for this show. You should now be able to get all of the episodes, all 105 or 6 of them before this. I guess since this is episode 107, you should be able to get the other 106. So if you're using iTunes, if you're using an iPod or an iPhone device, you should be able to download them on iTunes pretty easily. If you're streaming it off of the main website, of course, there's a calendar function on the blog, on the WordPress blog that I use. And just go all the way back to July of 2009. It's, in fact, actually the first one I think I did was August 3rd. So go to the calendar, go to the 2009 calendar and go all the way back and just click the calendar days. You'll see what days that the episodes were posted. And it should give you the older episodes that way as well. As far as the extra feed, hey, Nicholas, once I figure out how to do that, I will do it. If you have some pointers, please send them to me. He also sent me some more feedback that said he wanted to encourage me to listen to another podcast. The other podcast is called the Practical Defense Podcast with Alex Haddix. And he wanted to know if I had ever heard of it, and if not, he wanted to encourage me to listen to it. Nicholas, yes, you know what? I have heard of Alex Haddix, and I have listened to a lot of his shows. As a matter of fact, I just got done listening to one of his podcasts before I did this one. The reason I know of Alex Haddix and his Practical Defense podcast is because he's part of the Gun Rights Radio Network, and I'm part of the Gun Rights Radio Network with the other show that I do called the Handgun World Show. So if you're a handgun enthusiast, check out my Practical Handgun World Show. But this isn't about that show. Alex does a great podcast. You can find it on iTunes, Practical Defense Podcast. What I like about him is he talks about a lot of non-gun related ways to defend yourself. How to just use common sense, situational awareness, flashlights, things like that. Just good old-fashioned common sense, things that anybody can do. That's what I really like about Alex's show. You got to check it out. It's called the Practical Defense Podcast. So, Nicholas, yep, thanks for bringing that up. And the last topic that he wanted to tell me about was the Civil Air Patrol. And he said he's a member of it, and he's been a member since he was a teenager. It's an auxiliary of the Air Force, but there is no military commitment. And you need to check it out, folks. In fact, I'm going to invite you to go to our forum. There's a lot of discussion about the Civil Air Patrol on our forum as well. And, Nick, I just want to tell you that thank you for sending me this. It's a very, very long email, so I really don't want to bore everybody by getting into all of it, but it's fantastic. Hey, Nick, let me encourage you to do something if you haven't already. Post this on the forum. Post most of what you sent me in an email. Post it on the forum if you feel comfortable in doing it, because a lot of folks, I think, would like to read it. They would get a lot of benefit from it. And so, with that said, let me knock out a couple of announcements, and then I'll get to the anatomy of ending a fight. First of all, I want to make sure I remind you about the website, todayssurvival.com. I also want to remind you about our forum. Just click the forum page at the main website. It'll take you to where you want to go. We're closing in on 500 members. I blasted off a couple of spammer accounts on there, so you won't see those anymore. But we're closing in on 500 members. We're a good group. We're a slow-growing group, but that's good. And our forum is definitely not out of control. You should feel real at home conversing with like-minded people. By the time you hear this show, we will have already had our first chat night. And I think we're probably going to have our second, because this is probably going to get posted on September the 8th, on Wednesday. So join us for chat night. Our chat nights are Sunday nights and Wednesday nights at 8 p.m., Our chat room is like few others. We pick a topic, one topic, and we discuss it. And it's a learning chat room. It's not just a junk chat room, and we police it very heavily. So don't plan on getting on our chat room and giving people a hard time. It's supposed to be an educational experience. Okay? We will moderate it. I want you to feel welcome joining our chat room. I just want to let you know that we don't tolerate attacks and things like that. So join us. Just become a member of our forum and click the chat button. 8 p.m. Central Standard Time for you international listeners. If you can't be on there at 8 p.m. Central Standard U.S. time, I will probably set up a thread on the forum, and I'll put some of the main highlights of the chat room discussion on the forum. I'll leave out some of it. I'll make it a shorter post so you can get the gist of it. And the last but not least, I don't want to forget about my Freedom Raffle. Time is running out. If you want to help out gun rights causes and win a handgun or win some holsters or win a new knife, maybe a good survival knife, go to the Freedom Raffle page at todayssurvival.com. Tickets are only $10, and the drawing is going to be on Friday, September 17th. The last day for you to get your tickets is September the 15th, about a week from today. That's it. So with that said, let me just take a quick break, about 15 seconds or so worth of music, and I'll be on with the main topic. Okay, everybody. I'm joined by Steve from Alabama. He is using the magic of Skype to join us on the show today. Are you there, Steve?
Yes, I am. How are you, Bob?
Good. I am doing great. Thanks for coming on the show. For the listeners' benefit, I just want to tell you, Steve is a listener to this show. He's really into family preparedness, and I'm going to let him talk a little bit more about his own background, but I wanted to bring him on. First of all, as all of you know, I like to have listeners from the show come on here and share their experiences. I really believe that people learn best from other people and from testimonials, and I've had a chance to chat a couple times with Steve, and he's got some good things to share with us, so I'll let you take it from here. Let's talk about what you are doing as a family. Talk a little bit about your background and what you've been doing lately.
Well, been here in Alabama for about 6 years, retired from the military, did some military police work while I was in. Yeah. And since we moved in here, we've been working as a family to try to make the property that we own support us. Instead of being a boat anchor, we kind of wanted it to work for us. So we've done things like planted fruit trees and, you know, just done those sorts of kinds of things that would help us be more sustainable in a non-optimal situation like a family emergency or
yeah,
some type of, you know, bad situation.
Well, that's great. And, you know, first of all, Steve, I want to say thank you for your service to our country. Very much appreciated.
Welcome.
And, you know, before you and I made this call, you were telling me that you guys were doing something with blueberries, right?
One of the things that that we appreciate is being able to eat fresh fruit. And fruit can get more expensive, you know, if Publix isn't open, what do you do? So we decided, well, heck, we can try to grow some of our own things. So we started out by planting a few fruit trees in the yard, listening to Jack Spirko on the Survival Podcast. As
yeah,
you know, Jack is a big fan of, is not a big fan of, like Bradford pears, for example, which are pear trees, but they don't produce anything.
That's right.
They don't. We had three of those in our yard thanks to our home builder, and we took them all out and planted real peach trees or real pear trees. Back to the blueberries, we also planted some blueberry bushes. Our goal is to get rid of as much of our lawn as possible and put things in our yard that actually have some value. So we've got in the middle of suburbia, we've got a blueberry patch with 8 blueberry plants. And we just went out to a local blueberry farm. A lady out here in northern Alabama has been doing this for 40 years. And, you know, kind of looked around the yard and said, you know, how can we make our property work more for us? And, you know, do what we can do, and like you say, you know, do what you can do with what you have. And
right,
you got a half acre lot. That's a lot of land.
Yes, it is.
They wasn't really doing anything for us. You know, we're you know, watering the grass and mowing the grass. And I said, you know, we need to get rid of this grass and turn this yard into something productive. So we, you know, went through. We got rid of the Bradford pears. They didn't provide any value. And we put real pears and peach trees in. We got rid of a huge amount of the lawn and put in raised garden beds. We've got 4 by 12 raised garden beds that we built.
That's great.
We put in a blueberry patch. We've got blackberries. We've got fig trees in these big pots. And we've just done a whole bunch of different things trying to make the yard more productive. And at the same time, we're trying to learn the crafts of, you know, how do you grow things and how do you make things actually work for you? I mean, there are
yeah,
certain things in, for example, the peach trees. They've got to be treated at certain times of the year with certain things in certain ways to get a harvest. You don't just put, you know, seeds in the ground and all of a sudden, you know, poof, you've got the Publix garden market in your yard. It doesn't work like that. It takes a lot of work.
And the other yes, thing it does. Learned,
yeah, the other thing that we've learned, Bob, is that there's a lot of people out there with a lot of wisdom. For example, the nice lady we met today in the blueberry class on how to prune blueberries. She's been doing this for 40 years, and she has, you know, four or five people show up to her class, but she's got so much to offer as far as knowledge, important knowledge. But she was even telling us today, you know, she can't even get people to come, you know, over and work on her, help her with her farm. She's 82 years old and she can't prune, as I found out because I got to prune some of the trees. That was part of the class was actually learned by doing. And she said she can't even get the, she can't get any of the, you know, the high school kids to come out and pay them money to come help her tend her farm because it's not exciting, you know?
Yeah, that's a shame.
Yeah, it's real work. So, you know, that's one of the other things that I think is really important is being open-minded and looking for opportunities to learn about how to be more self-sufficient. I think those opportunities abound around each one of us, but we got to have the right mindset to take advantage of this lady that's got 40 years of experience just waiting for somebody to ask her a question, what does right look like? And that's what we were doing today. So, and we do that together as a family, and it's actually – I think it helps our marriage, my marriage, and it's a heck of a lot of fun. You know, I learned a whole bunch about pruning blueberries bushes today, which you know, I'm going to plan on using. And to me, that's how I choose to spend, or that's how we choose to spend our time.
I think that's neat, Steve. I really do. I think that's great. You know, I'm a big proponent of learning from other people and learning skills. And I'm more of a skills guy than I am a gear guy. I think that skills are more important than gear. I'm not saying that you shouldn't have survival gear. Everybody has to have a certain amount of it. But it's, I'm glad to hear that you're taking that to heart and that you're learning some things that you didn't know. That's great.
Well, yeah, I mean, just because I was in the, you know, the military for 20 years and I've, you know, handled firearms before, for example. You know, I believe one of the important things, like you talk about on your show, is the whole security aspect. It's not the only thing, but it's important because I'm a believer if you've got stuff, there may come a time when people that don't have stuff are going to want to come visit people that have stuff. And you've got to be prepared to defend yourself or, you know, in a reasonable sort of way. But with it comes a lot of responsibility. So, you know, Rob, my wife and I went last year and we went to a two-day firearms course. Well, actually, we found a firearms instructor. I mean, someone that does combatives with pistols and carbines here in northern Alabama that's fairly well known. He's also an adjunct instructor with the FBI. Anyway, we went out together and we learned a lot of what we, you know, what I thought I knew about using a handgun. I learned within about 15 minutes that there's a lot more I don't know than I do know, and there's a difference between concealed carry and carrying a gun and going to the range. They're not the same thing. Not even close.
Well, you know, we talked about this before, and, you know, I don't want to make this a gun show, but I love this gun discussion, so let's continue it for a little bit. Today is Monday the 24th, and a lot of folks are not going to hear this till sometime in early September, but, you know, last weekend, I was in Tyler, Texas, and I took a two-day handgun training course, combative course, called close-range gunfighting. And, you know, you're right, Steve. You're absolutely right. I realized in about 30 minutes what I didn't know.
Right, and I think that's a choice everybody's got to make. You know, on this preparedness stuff, you know, I listened to, I think I sent you my list of the podcasts I listened to.
I look forward
to the time when I get to go and exercise and listen to podcasts about how to be more self-sufficient. Very, very important. A lot of people don't realize every time you flip a light switch, every time you turn on a water faucet, you're expecting somebody other than you to help give you power and water. And that may not always be the case. So by doing this and talking with you, you know, I want to learn how I can, if when I flip that switch or I turn that faucet on, How do I take care of myself? Because I can't always expect it to be there, and that's what it's really all about is being prepared for when those bad times come and not having to freak out. Let everybody else freak out. I want to be able to sit back and go, okay, I know what to do in this, and you know I've already planned for this. I know what to do. I have an answer. I have a way to mitigate that risk.
Exactly. Well, I like to say that if you're prepared, when something happens, it's going to be more of an inconvenience than it will be a disaster.
Yeah, you've already kind of put it in your budget. I mean, because just like in even something that's managing things, if you have if you think ahead of time about what could go wrong, and you have a course of action in place, basically a way to mitigate that risk in place, then when the risk comes up and it becomes an issue, it's not an issue for you because you've already planned ahead and you have in your plan a way to deal with that right then. And it keeps you, you know, keeps you focused. The worst thing you can do is get excited and lose your head. You want to be able to remain calm when everything else is, if everybody else is freaking out because they can't get their Starbucks, mochaccino. That's not going to be me. I don't want to be there. I don't want to be out there. You know, just like what's the big deal on, why is it important, for example, to have stored food? Well, when people are running to the grocery store to fight over, you know, the bottled water and stuff, and you've got your own way to purify water, you're at home and you're safe with your family and you're not having to deal with all the craziness out there, people struggling for stuff. And you're also in a position where you can help others as well, because that's part of it too. It's not just about you. It's about we, and it's about helping the people that you need to help.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, Steve, because tell me what you think of this. I'm going to make a statement, and I'd love to get your opinion on it. I really believe that when any disaster strikes, whether it's minor or major, okay, there's going to be a lot of stressed out people. There's going to be a lot of stressed out people probably around you that have not prepared. And you said something very important just a minute ago. You said it's about helping other people as well. Do you think that if you had the resources, even if they were limited, to help other people as well, that would bring down everybody's stress level and maybe minimize the amount of people that want to take what you have?
Absolutely. I mean, I believe that there's always going to be some deviant folks out there that no matter what you do, they're still going to be deviants. I mean, that's just, I think, a fact of life. But if you can be the calm in the storm, you can be the one that, you know, that people, because they're going to be looking for leadership. When things go bad, people are going to be looking for people that have a plan, that
that's right,
not just have stuff, but that they know, you know, they're looking for leadership. That's what we're looking for, whether you're talking about politics or whatever else. That's one of the, you know, and I'm not going to get into a bunch of politics, but that's what we don't see in Washington right now. We don't see rational leadership. We see a lot of me versus we. And, you know, and that's the same kind of scenario you're going to run into in a preparedness situation, I believe, is people are going to be looking for leadership. They're going to be looking for the calm, cool hand, somebody to help them deal with all this non-optimal stuff that's going on. So I plan on being in the bucket of, you know, the people that have a plan and that are able to deal with it a little better than others. Not saying I've got all the answers, because I surely don't. But yeah, at least I'm trying, and I think I accept and appreciate the importance of being, you know, having a plan.
So glad you brought up the leadership example. I have not talked much about that on this show, and I'm glad you brought that up. You know, those of us who are preparedness-minded people, I guess you could say we're leaders in a sense, because we're thinking about the future. And we're getting ready to actually help lead people into a better way of life after disaster strikes. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. And I think what you're doing now on your show, Jack, on his show, and others out there in the preparedness space, they're trying to provide the leadership ahead of time to tell people that you really need to get ready for and be prepared. You owe it to yourself. You owe it to your family. And golly, it's just, you know, like Jack talked about, and I think you may have talked about it as well. You know, if we had 10 or 15 or 20% of the people that had the preparedness mindset, there's very, very little that we could not overcome as a group. But it's not all about me. It's all about, you know, everybody in general needs to try to move that way.
I have mentioned that. As a matter of fact, one of the things I remember mentioning, and I think Jack's talked about on his show too, one of the things I remember doing is I did a podcast where I said, what if only 10% of America became debt-free? Think about the positive impact that would have on our economy if just 10% had no more debt to pay and had more disposable income. That's a lot of people, and that's a lot of juice that the economy would receive.
Absolutely. You know, I mean, individual, and another part of this too, Bob, that you've mentioned on your show that I think is absolutely critical is that we've got a real lack nowadays of people having individual responsibility, whether it's, you know, just in a lot of things. In politics, you see lack of responsibility, but I try to focus on, Rob, and my wife and I try to focus on what can we do in our space, you know, like you say, do what you can with what you have. I mean, right. How can I at work, how can I, you know, even on your show, how can I make a difference in my community? What can I do to be right and to be more responsible? We're trying to take responsibility for, you know, our food supply. We've taken the time to, you know, be responsible firearms owners. You know, if you want a concealed carry, then you need to go get training and right. all those sorts of things. That's all part of the equation, I think, of doing what I can or what we can in our space. It's really boils down to a desire to better yourself. And oh, by the way, it's a heck of a lot of fun too.
Yeah, it is a lot of fun. You know, that's the thing. And in fact, that leads me to the next question that I wanted to ask you. I have no doubt that people have asked you before, hey, Steve, you know, how do I get started? And what's so fun about preparing? What would you say to them if they asked you that?
No, I think the biggest thing is knowing that if things get challenging, whether I lose my job, whether, you know, whatever, I get hit by the Tom snack truck walking across the street, which, you know, I joke about that, but it could happen.
yeah, it could.
I have a chance to be successful.
Yeah.
Anybody does. And that's something that I can do. And that's something that's very, very important to me. And the other part of it too is I really think I owe it to my family. I mean, I have a zeal and a
there
desire
you go.
To be. Is because I'm the man of the house, and my wife, that's my job. That's my responsibility. And by golly, I'm not going to outsource that to anybody. I'm going to figure it out and go out there and get it done. I mean, I was one of just, you know, two, I was the only male at this blueberry pruning class, for example. Well, guess what? Some people might say, oh, that's sissified or whatever. No, I'm learning how to grow food. That's pretty darn important. And plus, I'm working on my marriage at the same time. I mean, you can't beat that.
No, what's wrong with that? I mean, if they want to call you a sissy for learning how to grow food, then, you know, my opinion is screw them. If they want to think that you're a sissy for doing that, who's going to be the sissy when you have something to eat and they're starving?
Yeah, and I don't want anybody to starve. It's just like, what can I do? Go back to what can I do with my space? You know, I some people spend their time, you know, jet skiing, you know, bass fishing, going to football games and all that stuff. And I have I think that's great. For me though, I think with what's going on in the world, because I keep abreast of what's going on in the news, I just want to be prepared. And so I think the best investment for me and for my family is to try to improve our preparedness posture and, still have fun at the same time. You know, you gotta live. It's not, you know, I'm not gonna run out in the woods with a case of MREs and an assault rifle. That's not living. living is all about balance. And balance
yes.
in your marriage, balance in your spiritual life, balance in your finances, and all the stuff that you talk about. I'm all on board. I'm on board with all of that. That's all part of it.
You hit my hot button there. You hit my hot button. You know, one of my old mentors, Tom Hopkins, he used to drill that into people's head that life has to be kept in balance. And, you know, we find a lot of people who don't prepare, it's because they're out of balance. They're not paying attention to the emotional, physical, financial, and spiritual needs that every human has. And if you keep all four of those areas in balance, and I would say probably also staying organized as well, it just all seems to fall together, doesn't it?
Absolutely, and that's what I'm learning. I mean, I thought I was balanced for a long time. I mean, I've been in the workforce for a while, like yourself, and retired from the military, and, you know, and that gave me, you know, a certain perspective. But there's a lot more to life than all those experiences. And as I grow older, I tend to want to hang around people just like this lady that's been growing blueberries for 40 years. I
That's
gravitate
great.
Towards people like that because she knows what right looks like.
Yeah.
And she has so much to offer. And, you know, I signed myself up to come back to her blueberry farm and trim her blueberry bushes. She got my name and everything. Robin and I are going to do that because, I want to go there and I want to learn. You know, you want to learn how to build a house. I got a good friend. He started working for Habitat for Humanity. Go start swinging a hammer. You know, what can you do in your space to better yourself? Figure out who does it right and then go hang out with them and invest some of your time. That's kind of my plan.
Well, yeah, and it's interesting you brought up Habitat for Humanity because I'm a big believer in doing something for charities. You know, pick an organization, pick something that you're good at, and offer your services. You'll be amazed what you're going to learn from it, right?
Absolutely. And, you know, it's living, I think, it's a balance, but you got to be able to give, you know, you got to give your time and your energy and those sorts of things. That's good for the soul. It's very, very good for you. It can't all be about you. It's got to be about, you know, sharing a little bit, and everybody wins. You got to create the environment so everybody wins. And that's what I like about preparedness as well, is there's a real opportunity. There's a huge void there where people just don't realize how fragile the existence that we have is today. And people like yourself and hopefully myself, as I, you know, learn more and keep working, can fill that void for these other folks that don't know, just don't appreciate how fortunate we are in this country and how fragile what we have really is. It could go away in a second.
Yeah, it could. You know, and let's talk about that for a minute, because I have a question for you. I'd like to get your opinion on this. There's been a lot of discussion about bugging in versus bugging out. What are you preparing for, and what's your feeling about that?
Honestly, I have not completely followed your guidance.
That's okay.
I have the supplies for my bug out bags for my wife and myself, but I haven't put them together yet.
Yeah.
But on that note, my focus is a strong desire to bug in.
Me too.
I mean, that's the center of gravity. Bugging out, like you say, you can't carry a whole lot of stuff. You've got to have a place to go. You know, you're only going to survive so long driving out into the woods and, you know, setting up your Coleman stove. I mean, I think that's important. But what I'm doing to mitigate, see, that's a risk. Being able to bug in is a risk.
Yeah.
I plan on mitigating that risk by, sweet Rob and I spend a lot of time working on relationships with our neighbors and our community to build that community stronger. Because if the community's strong, I don't have to go anywhere. I can stay right here. And we have four or five families that we are, you know, that we spend time with and we talk about different things. I know a lot more about them than they know about me right now, but that's just kind of where we're at in the process. But it's a process.
Yeah.
Matter of fact, when I get off this, you know, I blueberry picking this morning. As soon as I get off this podcast with you, I'm going with one of my other neighbors and we're going to go to the range and we're going to go work on that relationship and we're going to work on helping him get his rifle sighted in.
And that's great. Today. You know, so, can I interject something about that?
Absolutely.
I've had a lot of people ask me, because they've heard me talk about relationships and building survival relationships. And I've had people ask me, you know, how do I build a survival relationship? You just hit the nail on the head. Take them shooting, take them hunting, take them fishing, even just taking them to something that has to do with survival, some kind of an event. I think that's a great place to start, don't you?
Absolutely. And then it also branches out into other things. For example, the same individual, you know, we talk about news and stuff, and I send him a clip of Mark Faber, you know, Mr. Gloom, Doom, and Boom report talking about, you know, Ben Bernanke printing too much money. And he brought up the other day, he started talking about, you know, Steve, you mentioned something about what would happen if, you know, we couldn't get any water out of the, you know, if the water was bad. And I got to thinking, boy, I need to store some water and I need to do this. And I said, yeah, I'm glad you asked that.
Yeah.
Let's talk about Berkey water filters. And so, you know, I've, a couple of my neighbors, they've kind of said, you know, that makes a lot of sense to have that up on the shelf. They've bought Berkey, you know, water filters. They've gone to Jack Spirko's, you know, the Berkey man, and they went and they spent the money. So
right.
You kind of one opportunity kind of lends itself to another. You don't have to put the hard sell on them, but you just paint the what if scenario you know, what if you can't get clean water? And, you know, 3 days later, you're going to be dead if you don't have clean water. So I kind of look for opportunities, but I don't try to push, you know, what I believe in at the pace I believe it. You know, people tend to assimilate things at different speeds, and you kind of got to gauge it. You want to be seen as value added, not as somebody that, you know, is crazy or, you know, doesn't really get it.
That's a great point. Be seen as a value-added type of a person. And I'm like you. I favor bugging in. I don't have the money right now to get a bug-out location. If I could buy a piece of land and put a structure up on there, I would. But I don't have that right now. So in the meantime, until I'm saving up for that, my goal is to figure out how to make the best of staying right here, if possible.
Exactly. You know, and there's lots of different ways that you can do that, too. Bob, you know, one of the things that we talked about earlier was, you know, security of the household, you know,
right?
And what, you know, what can you do? I think you just had a podcast about
crime prevention design. Through environmental design. Yep.
Exactly. Thank you. I'm having the Alzheimer's just kicking in.
No, that's okay. I'm glad you brought that up. And you know, when you and I talk about security, I want everybody to listen to this, or that is listening to this. Excuse me. I want everybody to know that we're not just talking about guns. We're not just talking about whipping out your Glock and throwing someone away. We're talking about securing your home and your perimeter as well.
Absolutely. And there's things that you can do that don't cost a lot of money, you know, from an alarm system or even trimming the hedges around your house can help
right.
you a lot. If you want to take away, bad people don't like lots of light. If you have a bunch of bushes right next to your house that are not trimmed and provide an opportunity for someone to remain concealed and then sit there and chisel away in a window. Those are the kinds of things you can do for free. All that's sweat equity right there.
You got it.
And that's kind of what we're looking at too, but that gets to the whole balance thing. You know, there's four or five or six different buckets from a preparedness perspective that I think are pretty common. Security is one of them. And there's personal security, and then there's security of your home, and then there's also security when you go out. Like, where do you go out? We went to a Walmart the other day, and there's a Walmart here in town that after a certain time of day, you just don't want to go there because the actual clientele and the silly stuff that happens in the parking lot changes. Well, that's a choice that you have. You can either go there and subject yourself to that risk, or you can choose not to go there and change your behavior. You have just increased your security posture by a decision you made of, you know, whether you're going to go shopping here or go shopping there. There's a lot of things you can do that don't cost money.
Exactly. Well, what you just mentioned is called situational awareness, and it's called recognizing patterns. You know, kudos to you. You recognized a pattern of behavior in a public place, and you made the decision, you know, I'm going to stay away from that because it's just not a good place for me to be, and I'm increasing my chances of something bad happening. So that's good.
Yeah, and that was something that we, you know, we learned a little bit about when we went to the 2-day defensive handgun course, my wife and I. Yeah. What was really neat about that course is the first half a day had nothing to do with shooting. It had
right.
to do with conversations like we just had. And it's all about avoiding a conflict, being situationally
exactly.
aware, because nobody wins when you have to, you know, use deadly force, for example. But if you have to use that, if you've exhausted all other means, you want to make sure that you're brutally efficient and that you don't finish in second place in a gunfight, that you win. But in the end, the best thing to do is to be able to create distance between yourself and the threat and not have to engage a threat at all. That's where the magic happens, and that's what the goal needs to be, is to avoid the conflict at all costs.
Absolutely. You know, I'm going to steal something from one of our listeners who's interviewed with us twice on this show now. His screen name is Jack Pine Savage, and I don't know if you listened to that show, but he asked me in the interview, Bob, what's the number one rule of a gunfight? And I got it wrong. I always thought the number one rule of a gunfight was to have a gun, and the number one rule of a gunfight is to not get in one.
Exactly. And that was the you know, 4 hours of our first day we were paying for. We were sitting in a classroom and
right.
talked about that exact concept and other concepts as well. So
yeah.
I really appreciated that. And it was interesting because my wife really didn't want to go to the course. And by the end of the 2-day course, and we shot 1,000 rounds each,
nice.
And she'd never really shot before, she was a changed person, and she realizes that the guy's name that we went and trained with is Tiger McGee. He's
yeah.
got a
shoot He's
right
awesome.
Firearm, Shoot Right Firearms Academy in Gunnersville, Alabama. He's a great guy, super guy. Go to his class if you ever get a chance.
Yeah.
And he said, hey, you know, he said, police officers, it's a fact. They're historians. They don't stop crime. What you want to do is make sure that you avoid have the opportunity to have the local historian have to show up and take a report. And the way you do that is you use your head and you make good choices, situational awareness and all those sorts of things. But that, I really appreciated that. That really resonated with me. It's not a macho thing. Security is not a macho thing, but it's a thing that's very, very critical. You need to be well trained and you really need to understand what the options are and what the best solution is, which is to stay out of those gunfights at all costs.
And it probably resonated with you a lot, Steve, because of your background as a military policeman, huh?
Absolutely. You know, been, you know, educated in that and got to do that for almost 20 years. And that's the main goal. You know, but when you have to employ deadly force, you want to be brutally efficient. You want to, you know, like I said, you want to make sure that you come out on top. But that's not the first choice. Even if you look at a police officer, they have many, many different ways to deal with a problem. They have handcuffs. They have nightsticks. They have expandable batons. They have mace. They have tasers. All those are steps before you use deadly force. So, in other words, they have a bunch of options on their belt to solve the problem, and they have a process they go through.
Right.
So if that's the case, does it really make any sense for Joe Bag of Donut civilian who's got his, you know, concealed carry permit to have one option in favor just going right for the gun? That's not what the police do. So I think that's probably a good clue that that's not what we need to be doing, focusing on as citizens that have been afforded the right to carry a gun.
Yeah, good. If you don't mind, if we can shift gears for a minute.
Sure.
How long have you been a prepper?
About 3 years.
3 years. All
right.
Good.
Right.
Good. What got you into it? What was, if you could point to one thing that woke you up, what was it?
I think it was watching the news and just having a deep feeling in my gut that the fun and games that have been going on and the thin veneer between the haves and the have-nots was going in the wrong direction and something's going to give at some point. Just a feeling. I don't know. Nothing specific.
Well, sometimes we just get feelings that speak to us, you know?
Right. And, you know, and that, and the other part of it too, Bob, is the fact that, you know, even if things don't get bad, I got a responsibility to take care of my family, and I can't outsource that. So, you know, put those two things together, and I really feel like it is my job to be prepared. I don't really see it as having a choice, a reasonable choice. As a husband, I have got to take care of my family, and
I like that. I like what you just said. It is my job to be prepared. I like that. As a matter of fact, I didn't know what I was going to title this show. Thank you. You just gave it to me. That's the title of this show. It is my job to get prepared.
Cool. Glad you like that. But I really do feel that.
Plus,
it just so happens that you know, when I talk to my wife about it, you know, you go talk to somebody that's never been to a firearms course and you say, hey, we need to spend the time and the effort and the money. We need to go do this thing. And she was on board like instantly. She said, you know, I don't really like guns, but I see value in that. It makes sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is kind of a family thing. You know, when we go shopping, everything that we do or most everything that we do, we look through the lens of how is this going to help us become more prepared. And it doesn't necessarily cost a lot of money. You know, we talked about whether or not we want to go on a vacation next year. You know, the only time we ever go on vacation is normally when we're going to visit family. You know, do we want to spend $1,500 going to wherever? Or do we really need to save that and put that in our emergency fund and maybe fund, you know, some preparedness things on our list? You know, what do we need to do? And then we figure out together what's best for the family. But we look through the lens of being prepared first and foremost.
You know, I'm glad you brought that up. I have to say, my family and I, we made a mistake this summer. We did just that, Steve. We spent $1,400 and we took a vacation. Now, I gotta say, it's not that I don't like my family. It was good to see some family that I hadn't seen in a few years. But I really wish we would have shortened that, maybe only spent $700 or $800 and spent another $700 on some extra preparation.
Yeah, and I'm not, you know, saying that going on vacation is bad. Just for me, for Steve from Alabama, at this point, there's some things I need to do because I have some other preparedness. I have a mom who lives very, very close, who's got some medical challenges. That's part of my preparedness plan as well. So I've got some things I got to consider, but I guess the key takeaway is, we don't just make decisions in our family based on, you know, what sounds good, what we have to kind of take it all into perspective and what's the best for the family long term. So we try to look with a long term vision. Doesn't mean we don't have fun, because we do. We have a lot of fun.
Right.
But which we're really trying to focus on, we don't have to spend a bunch of money to have fun. You know, we need to try to look back at some of the simple things. Like, when was the last time, you know, we played cards? Cards can be a great thing, and it doesn't cost a whole lot of money.
Absolutely.
But, I just think society nowadays is, if it's not an extreme sport, then gosh, it can't be fun. What do you mean? You're going to go for a walk? What is that? I just kind of laugh. So, you know, and that's why, you know, even talking to this nice 40-year, you know, lady that's been doing this stuff for 40 years, there's so much value in just spending time with people that you care about and helping people and, you know, doing those sorts of kinds of things. I need 29 hours in a day.
I mean, yeah, so do I.
There's just so much fun stuff to do and, you know, personal choice, but I don't need to spend a ton of money to do that.
Well, and you know, you mentioned it earlier in this interview. It's good for the soul.
Absolutely.
You know, absolutely. And that's great. My family and I, we like to play Monopoly. You know, that's one of those things that it's soothing for us. It's a good several hours worth of entertainment, and it teaches my kids something.
Yeah, but when I don't get bored walking Park Place, I always get to work.
You know what I love to do is I love to buy all the railroads, because, man, those things can pay off a lot in the beginning of the game.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's neat. So, but, yeah, you're doing the family thing, and that's
it's a family thing.
Well, because at the end of the day, I mean, really, when you think about it, at the end of the day, who really cares about you? I mean, you meet millions or thousands of people, hundreds of people, but who really matters at the end of the day?
Your family.
It's going to be your family, and it may be one or two close friends. But other than that, you're just an acquaintance, and that's just the facts of life.
So, yeah, that's right. You know, and I've made the statement many times that I consider people who listen to this show and join our forum, I consider them friends. But we're all scattered all over the world, and so at the end of the day, it's our families that are most likely to be there for us.
Right.
So
That's true. So, yeah, just you got to make choices on what's really, really important.
Well, this has been great, Steve. You know, we're almost out of time, but an extra 2 minutes we've got here, because I don't like for these to drag on long. But I'm going to go ahead and give you the floor. What would you like to say to everybody that's tuning in for the next couple minutes?
Well, I think I pretty much talked about the stuff I was really passionate about. I just wanted to say how much I appreciate the time and effort that you and people like Jack and others out there in the podcast land are taking and investing in.
Thank
getting
you.
People like me smart on things. Because, I mean, there's a lot you forgot more than I know on this stuff. I believe that, you and others out there. And that's very, very important. And that activity, what you all are doing, investing your time and your efforts, I think is absolutely critical to the success of a lot of folks in this country that are taking the time to listen. And I think I appreciate what you're doing. So, I mean, that's not really about me. And I appreciate you having me on the show. This has been fun. And I look forward to listening to all your episodes. I'm about halfway done, but I'm working on it, man.
Well, you know, I'm only putting out one a week right now, so it'll be easier for you to catch up, because I was doing two, sometimes three a week, but my schedule's kind of changed, so you should get caught up pretty soon.
Yeah, and two, I'd like to come back sometime and talk to you about the firearms, and got a specific interest in AR-15s. I've been listening to Eric a bunch and working on a couple of projects myself right now on tactical carbines.
I'm going to take you up on that. In fact, the next interview, why don't we do an interview for my Handgun World show, and we'll talk about some AR-15s, and I'll put you on that show. How does that sound?
That would be great. And no expert here, but I guess it could probably be from the angle of just a regular guy trying to figure out what's good, because there's a lot of junk out there as far as AR-15s are concerned.
I'll learn something from that, because I have to admit, I don't know a lot about those rifles. So I'm excited for that interview, because I want to learn from you on that.
Good. Well, hey, Bob, I appreciate your time and the opportunity to talk to you. It's been fun.
Yeah, well, thank you for coming on, folks. This is Steve from Alabama joining us on the show, and I appreciate your time, and I'm looking forward to having him on again. And are you on the forum?
Yes.
Okay.
Not hadn't been a whole bunch yet, but I'm going to get a lot more involved. I've just got a lot going on right now at work and other things, but I'll be a lot more active in the forums.
Well, you know what? I'm going to start a thread about this show, because there might be some people that have questions about some of what you said. So be checking that.
Very good. Sounds good.
All right. Thanks. You have a great day. Appreciate you coming on.
All right. Bye.